Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Overrule by Matthew Peed, narrated by Tristan Morris. Chapter 1. Regan Errol. I was happy. That was due to adding all the undead that weren't completely destroyed during the battle with the necromancers to my dungeon. I didn't much care for them as a workforce, or even monsters to fight the adventurers. Rather, they made an excellent source of mana for my dungeon. Their particularly tainted mana could be purified for much more mana than the average Joe who walked into my tower.
What should we do today, Master?
Same thing we do every day, Set. Try and take over the world, I replied, as I broke into hysterical laughter. So maybe the unholy mana was starting to affect my mind. I could see the corruption coloring my core with the increased undead in my halls. I would need to take care of that soon, or who knew what it might do to me.
I'm not sure that is something a dungeon can accomplish, Set said,
obviously not getting the reference. To be fair, I wasn't entirely sure where it came from. I think it was an old cartoon on Earth or something along those lines. One of those historical things that never seems to disappear over the years. Don't worry. I wasn't being serious. At least for now. I cast my mental gaze around the damaged sections of the dungeon. We have some cleanup to do. All the undead in the dungeon should move me a few levels up in Tier 2. I need to put that to good use. Set hovered over my core with an interested look.
What do you propose?
I contemplated what to do. The excess mana opened a few options for me as a dungeon core, but I ultimately decided it was best to stay the course I'd been planning over the last few weeks. I could just move those plans up. For starters, I want to get another core going. The question is where it should be located. I wish we could have captured all the necromancers. It is a pity that one of them escaped. Set moved in a bobbing fashion, as if excited, though she still didn't show it on her face.
About that, I believe the mortals managed to capture her earlier this morning, she reported, straight-faced.
She was more than just my assistant in the dungeon. Her control of shadow magic and illusions made her an excellent scout of the nearby town. She could collect information from just about anywhere in the valley. In fact, there were only two places that she actually had trouble. The Marquis's camp around his airship, and the church.
Really?
I mentally rubbed my chin. I would like to add the necromancer to my collection, but more to the point, she was another source of information that could prove valuable. From her actions during the fight, it was clear she held some level of importance to the band that attacked me. A leader, maybe? It would be tricky, but I needed to get her to the dungeon. I called Raven, then looked at the two of them. We're sneaking into the town later tonight to capture the necromancer.
Is that wise?
I shrugged, not really caring if it was safe or not. Frankly, the displays of the mortals around the valley had been underwhelming. Maybe not. I'm sure they'll have her under constant watch, but if they move her out of the valley or even kill her, it would be a complete waste.
Understood.
Raven left, heading toward where she was training with the hunters, while Set took care of some of her dungeon fairy tasks. There was actually more to it than just flying around, I learned when I asked her about it. For instance, by studying how everything worked, she could take control of the dungeon in the case of an emergency. I was a bit skeptical when I heard that, but she assured me it was only in dire circumstances. I could give her authority to control the dungeon separately, but I held off on that for the moment. I turned my attention to other matters once they left me. The battle had given me a good amount of mana to work with, but there was something I wanted to work on before expanding my dungeon any further. Moving to the top floor, which housed my labs and workshop, I pulled out one of the control collars that I'd taken from the necromancers. I was impressed that the necromancers each had two or three of the collars on them, as it wasn't easy magic, I assumed, at least, based on the glancing over I'd given them earlier. Let's see what we got here. Diving into the magic with my senses, I found it was an offshoot of the magic I'd recorded during the mental connection with the northern dungeon a few weeks ago. It was weaker, but still very encompassing. The main difference was that the collar didn't quite have a grasp on the target's soul. Compared to straight slave magic, the collars were designed to be released at some point, but came with the benefit of quickly attaching to a target. The metal was more interesting to me, though. It was similar to Mithril, in that it could hold nearly as much magic during enchanting. Its durability was about the same as steel, maybe a little better. The biggest difference was the weight. Compared to Mithril, it was 5 or 6 times heavier. Absorbing a little, I easily discovered how it was made. I wanted to shake my head. It just went to show that people would always find a way. If resources were short, they had to pour virgin blood over what looked like a steel and electrum alloy. Quite fitting for necromancers, I supposed. I created a bar of the steel electrum alloy from mana and summoned a goblin. With a quick thought, my avatar's arm materialized and sliced the wrist of the goblin. Its blood poured over the bar, but nothing happened. That was a pity. It appeared natural-born creatures would be required, or so I was getting from my dungeon senses. Forgoing the material that the original collar was made from, for now, I created an alternative using electrum with mithril engraving. I altered the spells to bind the person to me, while adding in some of the runes that I had condensed into a script from the bindings I was studying. Mainly obedience, since some of the slaves could still act up against their masters who didn't word their orders correctly. It was honestly one of the most hilarious events to happen when slavers dived my dungeon. Looking over the finished product, I was pleased with my work. It was expensive, mana-wise, but once I had a victim, it would siphon off roughly half of their mana, unless I otherwise specified. That was almost worth the cost in itself, and made me consider introducing some products into the world that would draw in mana as part of an activation sequence, but send most of it to me.
Master, when you are ready, night has fallen, Set said, bringing me from my work.
I glanced outside and saw that she was right. Time sure does fly when you're having fun. Quickly copying the collar I had working and pocketing them, I formed my avatar. Not wishing to draw attention to either of the forms I had at the moment, I shifted the face so that the ebony skin changed to black fur and I grew wolf features. Set altered her form as well, without me saying anything. Raven couldn't alter her features, but I helped her out by casting a simple illusion over her face. She looked the part of a forgettable human female that you would struggle to remember after a few seconds. The glamour probably wouldn't survive any confrontation, but we didn't plan to come to blows tonight. She was more of a backup in case something happened in the first place. Stepping out of the dungeon's aura into the forest, I glanced toward the light haze of the town. It had steadily been growing brighter as the town grew. We need to figure out a way to get to town faster. It might be less than an hour, but that is time wasted.
The big cities have teleport matrixes. Since you can make them, why not install one somewhere in the town?
Raven suggested. The matrices she spoke of only allowed general teleportation in the cardinal directions. There was no precision to it. But it furnished people a good deal of movement within the 500-kilometer range of these cities. I had an inkling that they were once connected, but the race that built them was no longer available to maintain them. Something to investigate if I ever visited one of these towns.
Not a bad idea.
I'll need to have Errol buy a house in town soon, I replied with a grin. We kicked off and flew through the forest, reaching the outside edge of town in minutes.
Set, do you know where the jail is or where they're keeping the necromancer? I asked.
I hadn't updated myself with the recent development of the town, focusing more on the dungeon.
Yes, this way.
She stuck to the forest, and we passed through until we were about halfway around the settlement. In the distance stood one of the district walls that was being constructed. She pointed to a grouping of buildings that certainly had a martial feel to them. Banners of Thonica Kingdom and a basic blue banner fluttered in the breeze from their mounts over the entrances.
Which one?
Set pointed to a building slightly separated from the others. There were no windows to speak of, and barely any light leaked from the cracks in the walls. I almost felt sorry for anyone they took prisoner. At least my prisoners got a nice town to live in. I nodded, and we faded into the Shadow Realm. Raven waited while Set and I moved forward. Once we were closer to the jailhouse, I noticed pulsing mana from one of the cells. It was in tune with the Dark Realm and with something further beyond.
Interesting.
We moved up the wall and through one of the cracks in the hastily constructed building. I was falling in love with the Shadow Realm. Physics was basically ignored there. Looking around, I found our target, with anger and hate all but rolling off her. Set and I moved toward her, and she jerked her head to look at us with a sneer that quickly morphed to a look of terror or amazement. I frankly wasn't sure. I was not prepared for what happened next. She fell to her knees, and several liquids pooled around her. I knew they were different, as the Shadow Realm gave them different shades. Her eyes glazed over before she collapsed to the ground, twitching slightly. I glanced to Set and asked, "Did you do something?" To which she only shook her head. The woman's actions drew the attention of the guards. I motioned for Set to take the left one, while I took the right. Drawing my sword, I lined the tip up with the guard's heart before lunging. Blood sprayed on the wall in the physical realm from the man's back and front, as the blade wasn't truly in the way. Set dispatched hers with equal ease. I grabbed the necromancer woman by the back of her collar and dragged her into the Shadow Realm. The cuffs on her hands were causing a bit of an issue by canceling out the mana, but I solved that by cutting her hands off. These I tossed to Set so I could reattach them later. We were about to leave when I realized I might be blamed for this no matter what I said as the Dungeon Corps or Errol. Some people were quite crafty about twisting the truth, or in this place, detecting the truth. Looking back at the guards we'd killed, I pointed my sword at them and channeled some mana. They started to jerk, then both rose to their feet. I ordered them to charge at anything living as they attempted to get outside. With a smirk, I turned from the chaos I created and moved through the shadows until we reached the forest. It was relatively easy for just myself, but dragging this dead weight was making it much more costly on my mana. When we finally made it back to the dungeon, I didn't hesitate to throw the woman to the floor. Phasing out of the Shadow Realm, I grabbed the necromancer's hands from Set and stuck them back on her wrists. With some mana, I healed them back on. Just a minor application of cell growth, after all. Standing up, I turned to Set with a grin. Well, that was fun. Chapter 2. Luella. The tapping of my nail on the desk echoed throughout the room as I stared at the wall. I was waiting for a messenger from Commander Yin. Apparently, the one necromancer we'd managed to capture had gotten away. We hadn't even started to question her yet. To say I was pissed was like calling the sky blue. A knock at the door drew my attention. Enter! Ezla and a member of the Golden Dawn came in. While Ezla looked the same as always, cool even when she knew I wanted to beat someone, the guard was very nervous, and probably for good reason.
My lady, Private Hugh.
My lady,
Private Hugh mumbled, saluting.
Well,
report, I said, waving for the man to get on with it.
Yes, last night, two men were murdered and turned into undead. Another of our number was eaten when he went to check on the prison. The commander managed to dispatch the undead, but we are still investigating whether there are more that might have left the prison for the surrounding woods.
Yes, yes. What about the prisoner? Do you have any traces on her?
I demanded, getting more annoyed. 90% of the people in the valley were adventurers or people of significant strength. They could take care of themselves against a few newly risen undead. The private gulped and shook his head.
No, my lady. Our mages detected traces of dark manor near the wall, but we were unable to track it much farther than the forest.
Damn it!
I slammed my fist on the table. I had planned to use the information that woman had on the necromancers to give me some leverage with the neighboring nobles. Not only had the dungeon eaten all the other necromancers, but it had taken care of all the undead as well. I could hardly call that my achievement.
You at least got a profile of her before she escaped, right?
Yes. We've already begun to make copies and disperse them throughout town to warn the people, as well as send them to villages and towns along the routes via hawks.
Good. Tell Commander Yin that we will discuss better facilities next time we convene. I don't want our prisoners thinking they can just walk away. I know the Mages Guild charges a pretty hefty amount for anti-mana devices, but if it will prevent this from happening again, I'm willing to pay the price.
I will do as you say, the private said,
with a salute. He started to back away.
Wait,
I called before he left the room.
Tell Commander Yin to run a check on all mages who use dark mana in the valley. I know that won't go over too well with some of the adventurers, but the circumstances don't allow us to be nice.
Yes.
The private practically ran out the door once I finished talking. I placed my head in my hand and leaned on the desk. After yelling at the man, I felt drained. I knew he didn't deserve it, but he ended up taking the brunt of my rage.
Feel better?
I glanced at Ezla and snorted.
I bet you enjoyed that,
I asked.
Luella Coates, just like her father, taking her anger out on the commoners.
Well, at least you are aware.
She moved over and placed a stack of paper on my desk. I sat up and grabbed the first sheet. It was a request to rent land by a noble from Thanaka. I pursed my lips at the document. The language used by the person who wrote the missive made it sound like it would be an honor for me to build and supply a residence for this guy.
I know this is weird coming from me, but do nobles have to be such asses? I'm not sure you want me to comment, mistress,
she replied, though I did catch her covering her mouth to hide her smile.
Go ahead. You're about the only one I trust right now. I think part of the problem is how nobles are raised. While you've turned out relatively well off, many take the path of their parents, stuck up and believing the world belongs to them.
I won't argue that. My dear old father certainly liked to believe he was better than even the king's laws. I sighed and turned to look out the window. The town was growing quickly around us, and I worried that with each passing day, those types of people would find their way into it.
I also knew that I needed to invite some of those elements in myself before they found their own way in. That's how you protect yourself. I gave Commander Yin a lot of crap, but she was doing an amazing job keeping crime down in not just the town, but also the surrounding area. If not for her, I feared we would have a much bigger bandit problem with all the adventurers arriving. Glancing back at the stack, I noted that it was several centimeters tall, then turned a questioning look to Ezla.
"Yep," she confirmed. "They're all property missives. If we accept even a quarter of them, we would soon be out of Valley to grow the town. I've already taken the liberty of rejecting many of the ones I know you would be against. I think there are maybe 10 at the top that you should consider."
"You are a blessing," I said, grabbing her hand and squeezing it. I really didn't know what I would do without her.
"About my pay?"
I gave a chuckle, and she soon joined me. We laughed until we both had tears in our eyes.
"No, no, no,"
Jacqueline admonished me while shaking her head. The Mage Guildmaster then sighed, probably for the 5th or 6th time this evening. "While lightning flows through metal like water through a pipe, it is seeking the spot that is its mirror. You might be able to force it through your enemies with enough mana, but that doesn't change this fact." "Does this have anything to do with the fact that my lightning tends to arc toward the ground when I practiced against dummies and whatnot? Unless they were wearing metal armor, the magic would always veer toward the ground."
"Yes, I am glad you noticed that," Jacqueline said, clapping her hands and pulling a drag from her pipe.
"We are still working to understand the relationship between Terra and lightning manas, but there is a call from the Terra mana that seems to pull the lightning toward itself. We think it has something to do with metal being of the Terra family, but alas, it still escapes us."
"I see. How does this help me, exactly?"
"It may help you very little, or it might be the thing that helps you break through to tier 3. That's the way of the universe, after all. Knowing more about your element is never a bad thing."
"That is a good point. I think that will be all for our practice today."
"Thank you, as always, Master Jacqueline," I said, bobbing my head to her. She was about to reach the door when she hesitated.
"Actually, I have one more thing I would like to discuss."
I paused as I grabbed my teacup.
"What would that be?"
"I'm not sure if your little commander has reported this to you yet, but the dark magic that was used when the necromancer escaped, it dealt with the Shadow Realm."
"The Shadow Realm?"
As probably the most powerful person in the valley, Jacqueline would know what she was talking about. Even in my time at the Academy, short however it might have been, I hadn't heard about this realm.
"Yes, a very dangerous place. People that play with that realm are equally as dangerous as, if not more dangerous, than the things you can find inside its twisted mirror image world."
"I think I understand. We will be careful. I would recommend warding the town. Certainly the buildings that serve as important arteries to the livelihood of the people here."
"I'm guessing you could do this for me?" I asked, taking a sip of my tea.
"I can. If you would put together a recommendation, I will see if the town can afford it."
"You got it."
Jacqueline cupped her cheek and sighed. "If only the dungeon would turn more of a profit. We're going to stop getting adventurers soon." With that, she turned and made her way out of the sitting room. I leaned back, staring at the ceiling as a bout of hot rage took over. I threw the teacup at the wall, where it smashed into pieces.
"Why does everyone have to take advantage of me?"
I kicked the table, putting a decent-sized dent in the wood.
"Mistress, are you all right?" Ezla shouted as she rushed in the room. "I heard a loud noise."
I glared at her a moment before I managed to take a deep breath and calm myself. Sorry. The last few days have been rougher than I thought. She nodded before she smiled. How about we head into the dungeon tomorrow? Blow off some steam by killing a few goblins. My hand tightened into a fist until my knuckles turned white. Part of me didn't mind the idea of punching something until it stopped moving. All right. Sounds like a plan to me. We only have a week until the tournament. Best get some private time in before all the vultures start to show up. I dropped back down onto the couch. I was exhausted from all the details that went into planning the tournament. If the Marquis wasn't here, then it would be much more straightforward. But then again, we wouldn't be having the tournament if he wasn't here. What do you think the turnout will be? Normally, I would say a few dozen. Even with a new dungeon as a draw, its kill ratio is much too high. That said, you have the dreamboat of Marquis Valimar here. More than a few will be coming just to try to win his favor. Mostly of the female variety. Make sure we tax each and every one of them. I'm done giving handouts. Chapter 3. Regan Errol. I stared at the woman we took from the jailhouse. Her unholy manna was a bit denser than the others, besides maybe the chain user. She was still knocked out in the cell I made for her. A few hunters literally stared at her without blinking in case she did anything stupid upon awakening. It appears the town didn't appreciate you taking the necromancer, Set said, appearing next to me. I chuckled. Served them right. They notice anything? It might be best if we keep our use of the Shadow Realm down for a few days. I heard some of the mages mention the use of dark magic. While they might not be able to find us while we are inside, they might be able to track it with enough data. Suggestions of warding the buildings soon were being tossed around.
I don't have too many plans for the town for a while. Maybe check out the tournament. I wanted to get some practice in my other form with a few weapons. Set remained silent for a few moments, but she appeared to want to say something. Out with it, I said, figuring it was about my safety or something similar.
I was eavesdropping at the Adventurers Guild. If we don't do something, adventurers might stop coming due to the high death rate of the dungeon.
Is that what you are musing about? I asked, giving her a mental grin. Don't worry. I know perfectly well what motivates people to do things, and as such, I have a plan.
Set nodded.
Satisfied, I was thinking about the overall health of the dungeon. I turned back to my prisoner. I hadn't interrogated the other necromancers yet. The attack had only been 2 days ago, and with everything going on, I hadn't taken the time to deal with them yet. I was also worried I might break them, and they were giving me a nice chunk of mana that I didn't want to risk just yet. An extended tendril of shadow sent a jolt of electricity into the sleeping woman. She jerked awake, jumping to her feet.
What's going on? Where am I? She yelled, looking around.
In a cell, of course, I said, forming my shadow monster avatar. She locked on to my voice, then stared at me.
You,
she said, before her nose started to bleed. She dropped to her knees as another puddle formed under her. From being in my dungeon, she had both wet herself and climaxed at the same time. I had to wonder if something was wrong with her.
Death personified.
I like it. What is your name? I was glad she didn't pass out this time, but this reaction had me wondering what exactly she could see.
Julie, Master. No, my lord, she answered, grabbing the bars of her cell and wearing a fervent expression.
What can you see? I asked simply, moving my tendril over her face. I sent the shadowy mass into her eye.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?